Welcome to Lightbulb Moments. Join us as we explore transformative experiences and insights in business and life. Here's your host, a maximizer and problem solver who, through his extensive skill set and network, builds long-lasting and meaningful relationships and continuously learns and applies new knowledge, Phil Fornaro.
All right. Hello, everyone. This is Phil Fornaro, and this is Lightbulb Moments. It's all about the energy, and the episodes are piling up now. Our network is growing exponentially, and most importantly, my happiness is ballooning. What I've seen now is our guests, as they've grown and as they've become part of our community, our Bright community, it's really starting to impact people, and we're starting to get a lot of feedback in the positive way. And we're going to start connecting people at a high level. And I've been, after almost every episode now, I've had a light bulb moment as to who to connect with who. And as a result of that, we've already made some significant connections in our Bright community. So just join us every couple times a week. It's only an hour a day. And listen a little bit. And it's not necessarily what I'm saying. It's what our guests are saying, because the more I do this, the more impactful the guests become, and you'll see the progression and evolution of the podcast that way. So enough about LBM. Let's talk about Rob Levine from Rob Levine and Law, and I'm going to say Rob Levine Law Plus, because there's a lot of things that Rob does. We're going back to the law today a little bit, and you know how I don't like bringing lawyers on this, only if they're entrepreneurial. And only if they can add value. And I like to give a lot of givers too here. I love to get attorneys like to give back to their community. Rob does a lot of charitable stuff. We'll talk about that. But what's kind of impactful to me here is that there's not a lot of people in the legal community that give back to the legal community at a high level and give them tools necessary to increase their bottom line and increase their ability to grow their law firm through some of the things that he does. So real excited about today. Rob, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, just before we started talking, I find that you're in Puerto Rico now.
Absolutely. Back and forth between Rhode Island and Puerto Rico.
Yeah, so it's unbelievable. It's just like Puerto Rico week, as I said. You know, we just had John Lee Dumas on, and we talked to him about a variety of things that he does, a short episode that's coming up. But yeah, I mean, why not? It's a beautiful community. There's, you know, beneficial tax laws down there. I'm sure there's other things as well.
Yeah, the water, the weather, the people, the food, the culture, lots of things besides just the tax laws, but certainly the tax laws don't hurt.
Yeah, it's always a place to go. I mean, yeah, Florida, all my clients are fleeing to Florida. So we got a big practice down there now because of it. So
that's great.
So, all right, well, let's talk a little bit about you. What would you like to lead out with? Would you rather talk about your history, or you want to talk a little bit about some of the stuff that you do on the entrepreneurial side?
Well, the history is actually interesting because where I started really is entrepreneurial in and of itself. So we'll start from graduating from law school. My first job out of law school was to open my own law practice with my then brother-in-law, Anthony Gemma, whose brothers owned a plumbing and heating company. And back then, when we started, there was probably about 50 guys, and they were doing about $5 million a year. And so they hired me, along with their brother, Anthony, to sit on the executive board. My job was to run the accounts receivable department, do real estate acquisitions, and help grow the plumbing company. So, and then on the side, I started the law firm. And so I was with them for 7 years. We purchased probably 300 real estate units. We bought an old movie theater and turned it into a dinner and a movie. And we grew their plumbing company from 50 to 300 and 5 million to 40 million a year. So that is really where I got my energy and excitement for business and trying different things. They let me do whatever I wanted, which was an amazing experience.
Got it. So I feel vindicated because I have had so many side hustles while I was being a lawyer, and I haven't found too many people that do that. But that gives you energy, and it actually grows your law practice too, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, you're meeting people every day, and so it just continues to spread, right, the word of what you do, who you are, and then builds your reputation.
So that's interesting. So the plumbing company now, just out of curiosity, I've been watching, and I'm a big alternative investment guy, and I do a lot of following of trends with private equity and venture capital. Did that company ever get approached for private equity? Because I know a lot of those trades are starting to get bought up.
Yeah, so the original plan was to turn it into an IPO, and we were going to roll it up into Benjamin Franklin Plumber, the on-time plumber.
Yeah.
And so we were the second largest company in the group. And I worked on that for probably a year with the people from Benjamin Franklin Plumber, and the brothers backed out like 5 minutes to the end signing. And so they continued. Yeah. And so they continued growing. And then in the end, somebody came in and bought them. So they kept a percentage for themselves, but they sold out the majority. So now it's owned by a much larger company.
Yeah. I just, I think I would want to roll up into the Benjamin Franklin Plumber just because of the name. That's a fantastic tagline.
Yeah. It was a cool name. It was the concept was amazing, but they weren't ready. And, you know, everybody's got their own journey. And so Anthony and I thought it was great and they didn't. And so you live and learn.
Yeah. We talk about that a lot of this podcast is, whenever I make a mistake or I don't do something when I thought I should have done it, I just say I wasn't ready. And it's a good phrase.
Yes, like what you referred to as a light bulb moment, right? So I just learned that my journey isn't necessarily somebody else's, and you got to do what you got to do.
That's awesome. So what else? So then keep on going with your history. I like where we're going. I'll take you off path a couple times, but I'm confident you'll stay with me here. So
absolutely. You can try and knock me off path. That's hard to do.
Got it.
So that was my first 7 years out of law school. And so when I first started the law practice, we did a little of everything. So I did some divorce law, some criminal law, family law. I tried bankruptcy. We had a national title and closing company. And so that really took off. And then the personal injuries started to slowly grow. The first to die was criminal. I'm a retired police officer, so that those two things just didn't fit together for me.
Nope.
Couldn't do it. family law didn't work because it just didn't. Fighting over the knives and forks and spoons, and my clients didn't like me. The other side didn't like me. That wasn't really fulfilling. I didn't feel like I was saving the world.
Yeah.
And so I kind of niched it down, and we were doing the title and closing and personal injury. And so we were doing subprime for the title and closing. So this is, let's say, 2004 to 2008. And so in 2008, obviously, we all know what happened there. That was the end of subprime. Just a disaster. But it was fun while it lasted. We had a stretch caddy limo that said Legal One on the license plate. And we took out mortgage brokers and took people out partying. And because back then there's no licensing, right? So anybody who could sell a mortgage was basically kids off of a used car lot with these mortgage companies were pulling in and selling mortgages. And then I had a team of three women who were our sales team for the title and closing business, just taking them out and earning their business.
So wait a minute. Was this like the deleted scene? If we get the uncut version of Big Short, you guys
would be in this? Exactly. Yes. Exactly. I am definitely a contributing cause to the Big Short.
Oh my God. That movie was awesome. And it was funny because I watched it, you know, I watched it obviously right after, you know, and I lived it. You know, we're probably similar. I was representing all debtors, you know, during that crash. So we made a market up here in Chicago for all of the debtor stuff. And what happened was I watched it with my son, you know, probably about 6-7 months ago. And when you watch that movie a second time, when you've actually lived the perspective of it and then explain it to someone that didn't experience it because they were, you know, young, you know, very young.
Right. Yep.
It's kind of like, oh my God, that was a period of history, man.
Right. And when you tell people like, oh yeah, the banks were loaning 120% loan to value. And of course we had what I called the liar's loan, which is really a no doc loan. So the bank's like, okay, sign here and we're going to give you $350,000 with no documentation. I mean, just the most crazy, insane stuff I've ever seen.
Yeah. I don't understand it, but you know why that happened, but it did.
Greed.
Yeah, it was greed. It was great. Hopefully we don't have anything like that happen again soon. So, but anyway, that's good. So then you were doing that. What was next?
So in 2008, that completely ended. And personal injury really started to grow. And then we added in Social Security disability, which was a great fit for us because that's nationwide. So it gave us, just like the real estate, the ability to really grow across the country. Whereas personal injury, at the time, I was only doing really Rhode Island and Southeastern Mass. Now we're doing Rhode Island. We're advertising in the Boston market. So we cover all of Massachusetts and part of New Hampshire. And we're also in Connecticut. So a decent footprint for PI and then Social Security. And then later came Veterans Disability, which added in obviously another nationwide practice.
Got it. All right. So then you got deep into PI. Did that give you the flexibility to do some of the other things you're doing? Or?
Yeah. So the idea of having grown the law firm, right? So we're now, the law firm alone is like 235 people. And so having created systems and processes, and we built our own record retrieval practice for our law firm. We opened it as a separate company. And then after COVID, we started hiring internationally. So I started a company at the time, it was called Top Notch Remote Solutions. So we were hiring in Colombia and Peru and the Philippines. And then, you know, I had friends approaching me for different things, and we really just decided to start opening all of the businesses that we were building for ourselves for other law firms. And so instead of having all these separate brands, the record retrieval company started out as Record Retrievers, and then it became Records on Time. And then we had Top Notch Remote Solutions for the hiring company. We run a mastermind and consulting group for lawyers, which we called Legal Ascend. And going to shows and having all these different names and websites, it just became too confusing. And so in order to have that 30-second elevator pitch, we created Rob Levine Legal Solutions. And so under that, we have the record retrieval company, we have the academy and outsourcing. So I hire people in other countries, Colombia and Peru. We train them, they go through a full academy. I hired the training and development manager from T-Mobile. She was there for 13 years and brought her right hand with her, who was there for 18 years. And so we've just assembled an amazing crew. So we train someone, case manager, legal assistant, or intake, and then we place them in law firms around the country.
Got it. So is that part of it, the staffing sort of? When did that start?
So that started for me right after COVID. And then probably within 6 months, my close friend, Paul Harding, who runs a law firm up in upstate New York, and he's expanded quite a bit now. He's like, hey, can you help us hire internationally? And at first I'm like, no, we're just doing this for ourselves. And so he asked, and then another friend asked, and another friend. And I'm like, okay, we should turn this into a business. Now, so there's a ton of companies who hire internationally and do staffing, like you said.
Yeah.
But nobody does what we do. So our academy is 12 weeks long to be a case manager. So it's full-time, 5 days a week, 8 hours a day, and you get certified. We have a 20% washout rate. So you graduate from our academy as a case manager in personal injury. Then I place you in a law firm.
Got it. So case manager just meaning controlling the pace of the cases and how to
file. Yeah, they're handling the case cradle to grave, start to finish.
Got it. And how did you sort of learn that that was a possibility? I mean, where did that interest come from? I mean, were you traveling in those areas and seeing the workforce, or what happened?
In Colombia and Peru, you mean?
Yeah.
We hooked up with an agency who we hired a few people from and tested it out. And then I just felt like we could do it better than they could, which is the same thing with the record retrieval. We hired an outside company years ago, probably 15 years ago, to do record retrieval for us. And it just wasn't a great experience. And so we went with technology. So we built a proprietary platform which integrates with the case management system of the law firm. So it literally, everything is electronic. We pull stuff, we push stuff, everything goes back and forth. So it really takes all of the work out of the case manager's hands.
Got it. So you have, now I'm sure it's trending towards artificial intelligence in some of this this arena now too, I would think.
Yeah. So we actually signed a partnership today with a company called Faster Outcomes. So they are an AI company. And so, you know, we were looking for an AI company to use for our law firm and to use for the record retrieval. And so one of the guys that are the owners, and I'm now one of the owners of Faster Outcomes, one of them I've known for a long time. I didn't even know he was in this project. And so we started talking about what I'm doing, what they're doing, and it was just a perfect match based on our background. So I'm now the general manager of the PI division, and I'm now a partner in the business. And so we're going to do demand letters, obviously, through AI. We're going to do Medcrons through AI. And obviously, we'll be able to collect records for people using our record retrieval service and then put them through the AI system. But that's the tip of the iceberg. The future, right, of where we're going, right, the AI in the future is really just to run the law firm. So imagine taking everything in your law firm and uploading it into this closed LLM and teaching it your case values, all of the letters that you auto-populate, connecting it to your case management system, and giving it everything that you have, and then having an office assistant and saying, on the Smith file, I need to draft a letter for this, this, and this. And it can just pull everything that you've used in the history of your law firm and create it for you.
Got it. Yeah. Large language model, Bright Community. I think that's what you're saying with LLM.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. Got it. Yeah. Sometimes these words become, you know, second nature to some of us, but not necessarily to everyone. So that's the future of law. So then, is this in your idea where this is going, or the concept of where it's going? Is this going to affect the law firms in general? Is it going to affect associates, clerks? Is it going to affect first year lawyers? Is it going to affect mature lawyers? You know, what is your thought there?
I think you're always going to need the lawyers, right? You need the license. You need the practice of law. You need somebody to be able to do the thinking. But I think that we're going to see the AI being able to lower the wage position for, you know, the case managers, the legal assistants, the people doing all of the legwork, which is super important and makes the law firm run. But I think that AI is going to be able to do it better, faster, and more efficiently.
Yeah. And it's funny. I mean, legal, do you see that legal is, for technology based, is usually one of the last industries?
Yes, one of the last sectors, for sure.
And why do you think that is?
We're stubborn.
Linear thinkers, I always say. Most of the lawyers are linear thinkers. So,
right. I would agree. I think that, I don't know, we get trained in law school, right, to do things a certain way, think a certain way, analyze a certain way. We follow that path. And so that's a big part of what I do, right, with the lawyers who come to us for our mastermind group or our consulting, is trying to break that pattern, right, and getting people to think of the law firm as a business, because that's really all it is. It's a business that's in the practice of law. If you run your law firm like a law firm, right, it's hard to scale, hard to grow, hard to have projections and profitability, whereas those are all the things that are common nature to a business person. But they don't teach business in law school. They teach the practice of law. So I see lawyers, and not just in small law firms, in large law firms, who are spending all of their time, the owners, the partners, on the practice of law, working in the business and not spending any time on the business. So that's a huge focus of what we try and do.
Yeah. So what are some of your steps associated with that? What would you do? Let's say a lawyer comes in, say, yeah, we got a great client base. We're growing the clients. We're growing our relationships. And yet, you know, the profitability is not there. I can't hire well. I can't get organized. You know, what are some of the steps generally?
So my first question is, what is your goal? Right? What do you want the law firm to look like? Because some people want to be a mammoth and some people want to be boutique. So it's figuring out really what that individual lawyer wants. Because what I want, right, is not necessarily what somebody else wants. Like the lesson I learned with Jem Plumbing, right? I wanted to become an IPO and sell it and be huge. That wasn't their goal. So we try to figure out what the goal is of the lawyer. And then I try to kind of funnel it down to look at, so show me what you have for projections and numbers and how you're putting it together. And what I realize is most lawyers don't do projections. They don't have numbers. They don't, that's just not what they do. So that's where we start.
Got it. And does anybody ever have a hard time figuring out what their goal is? And if so, how do you help them there? Or don't you? You say,
think yeah, I've had people that either have completely unrealistic goals. Like someone told me they want to do, I'd like to do $100 million in the next 5 years and be doing that a year. And I'm like, okay, that's fantastic. How much are you doing now? 3 million.
Yeah.
And well, obviously it takes, in a personal injury law firm, you're looking at an average of 12 months to turn a case in pre-litigation, not counting lit, right? Yeah. So I'm like, so next year, how much you're going to make is already done, right? It's a given for how many cases have opened in the last 12 months. So we're at 5 years, you just knocked out down to 4 years. What's your plan for projection for growth? If we back into it to do $33 million a year, how many cases do you have to open? How much do we have to spend in the market? And where are we? And so after I take somebody through that journey, they're like, so it's not realistic? No, probably not.
Got it. So, all right, I see. So then after you set this structure and you get the goal and you say, okay, you know, how are we going to accomplish this? You know, what are some of the steps that you take then?
So we build subject matter expert breakout rooms in our, so our mastermind is different than most. Most masterminds, they meet a couple times a year in person and they talk about certain things. We meet once a week on Zoom, so four times a month, and then we meet in person twice a year. So on Zoom, the first of the month is the goal setting and accountability. So every month I hold people to their goals, hold them accountable, and make sure they're following their plan and their projection. The second and fourth week of the month, they can pick what breakout room they want to go to. So we have subject matter experts in intake, operations, marketing, human resources, training and onboarding, and whatever it is specifically that they're working on for their firm at the time, they go to that room and focus on it. And then the third week of the month, we do like hot topics. So whatever is trending, what's important, what the group wants to focus on.
How big are the groups?
Right now, we have a little over 20-something law firms in the mastermind group.
Got it. So that's Zoom. And then I may have missed it, but do you ever get together as a group in person?
Yeah, twice a year. I mentioned to you when we were talking before the show. So we're coming to Chicago in September. And so we were just in South Beach in March. So twice a year. And our in-person meetings are different. So the normal mastermind group is talking about the things I just talked about, and members are doing presentations. So I brought in, for instance, in South Beach, two professional speakers, one each day. They each presented for like between 3 and 4 hours. So I want the members to see the bigger picture, right? So the business concept. One was talking about digital marketing, and the other was talking about culture and leadership and growth. And so just trying to expose people to different ideas, different concepts, things that they're not used to working on every day.
Got it. Is that you in the group, or you got someone else running the mastermind groups?
Well, I mean, obviously I have a team so that helps me, but yeah, it's my group. I'm in charge of it.
Got it. Oh, cool. So yeah, I've got to, and I mentioned this sort of briefly, but there's a guy named Steve Fretzen who it's the podcast called Be That Lawyer. I'll definitely connect you with him because this will be very fascinating for his audience, because he deals directly, you know, only with lawyers on his podcast. So it might be nice for both of you to sort of grow. He does, I'm in his peer group, you know, with a bunch of attorneys too, and sort of similar concept, not as robust as what you're talking about, but very, very, very good discussions that we have with other lawyers. Because to be perfectly honest, based on what you said before, I was resistant for so long. I'm in a couple, groups where we talk to other business owners, et cetera. And I sort of shied away from being in the lawyer group for a long time because, you know, I really didn't enjoy right. it too much. So yeah. But now I've got a good group with Fretzen, and there's some nice people, a lot of people from all over the place, all over the country. So we share ideas. It's kind of nice. And we're trying to tell our bright community is you can't get anywhere if you're not, you know, bouncing ideas off of people similarly situated. So
right. The key is to surround yourself with people who are smarter than you and then just share ideas.
Got it. And then what about, for sure. And what about compensation structures? Do you go, you know, talk about, how do you pay like associates and how you get the top people? I mean, is that something that goes through your groups?
I mean, everything from A to Z, I would say we cover at one point or another, and certainly comp structures, we cover for attorneys and then for team members. So obviously as a lawyer, you know, right, you can't share fees with a non-lawyer, right? So I'm a huge proponent of lawyers working, especially in what we do in personal injury, in lawyers working on commission. Because when a lawyer has skin in the game, right, it is just a different work ethic, a different connection to the case, a different connection to the client. So our pre-litigation lawyers in my firm are 100% commission. So when I hire you, you get a base salary. You're probably on a base salary for a year, but by the time your year is over, you have a full caseload and you move to commission. So you get a percentage of the cases that you resolve.
Wow. So that's it. Are you, you're pretty much advising only PI attorneys, right?
Or correct. You get in,
got it.
Yep. We have a property damage guy who's in the group who doesn't do any injury. He just does catastrophic property damage. So he gets a lot out of it. And we've had a few other people over the years that are in other areas of law. But for the most part, we're 98% PI.
Got it. And then what about the technology world of law? I mean, it's advanced. It's getting better, you know, from even 10, 12 years ago, there wasn't a lot of out-of-the-box things to work with. What are you seeing as the best solutions technology-wise for lawyers?
So, for instance, I'll give you a few different pieces of technology we use now. So we use a company called Hona. So Hona is integrated into your case management system. And so it does a couple of different things. So number one, the goal is to improve your customer contact as well as your customer service appreciation. So for instance, I recorded 23 videos. And so the videos are tied to the status of the case. So as the case moves through the case management system and it changes statuses, it automatically texts the client and sends them the video, keeping them informed as to what to expect. You've moved into this next status. This is what it means. This is what's happening with your case. We also do surveys. So for instance, in the beginning of someone's case, if we believe there's the potential for a TBI, a traumatic brain injury, it sends out the Philadelphia test and they can answer the questions right on their cell phone, comes back to us. We use it for NPS score, looking at surveys to see, you know, how we're doing from a customer service perspective. So, and they can text back and forth with their case manager. All the information goes right into their case. So for us, that's been a huge improvement in how we communicate with the clients, getting information back from the clients, and improving, right, the expectation of the customer service.
Wow. All things I didn't know existed. You know, I'm not in PI at all. You know, I did it briefly as a young attorney because I had to. And
yeah.
That was one of the things along with criminal and family law that I sort of separated from. So very interesting.
So the next piece I would say, which would be applicable to any business, is we use Domo. Are you familiar with Domo?
I'm not.
So Domo is an amazing piece of software. So it comes out of a company, a Domo, based out of Utah. And so it can attach to any other piece of software that you're using. So let's say you use QuickBooks, and let's say you use RingCentral as your phone system, and you use Google for your pay-per-click and LSA and whatever else you're advertising. And let's say you have some other proprietary system in the office for your running your business. So Google attaches to each one of them. Think of it as like an octopus, and the arms go out and connect to each one of these different pieces of software and pulls the data sets into Domo. And so now you have all of your data from QuickBooks, from your phone system, from Google, all laid out in one central place. And so you now can manipulate the data into any kind of report you want. So you can say, if this happens, what does it do to my numbers? Give me a projection changing this over the next 12 months. Give me a 3-year plan. And you can use the different pieces together to look at your business in different manners of how it's growing, how it's changing, data that you need to know on a regular basis. It'll automatically send you reports. If you have customers you get referrals from, you could build out windows for your customers so they could log in and see how their pieces are doing within your business that they referred to you. It does just a million different things. It's phenomenal.
Wow. And, you know, I've been looking for something like that for a long time. Every time I integrate, there's always some issue, you know, and I've failed many times in trying to get RESTful. I think that's what they call APIs and yep. sort of compiling things together. And it always gets to the point where whatever I do, something doesn't link properly. So they've pretty much mastered this concept. It's called Adomo or Domo?
Domo, D-O-M-O.
Got it. Wow. I got to look into that. Yeah, because it doesn't make sense that someone hasn't created it, but now I figured out now today that my light bulb moment is that someone did create it. That's the best thing ever.
If you watched the Indianapolis 500 last year, all of the statistics, all of the numbers, all the information that you saw compiled together, all was produced by Domo.
So that's sort of like it's almost like an analytics thing. Is that?
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
I wonder. So this is an interesting phenomena. You know, you could steal my idea if you like, but let's maybe talk. Huh?
I said happy to.
Happy to. Maybe we'll talk about it. Maybe we'll joint venture, because what was going on here is that I'm looking for, even for this podcast, you know, trying to find analytics, everybody has some level of it, but there is nothing like a Domo. And I don't think, I'm looking and I read a lot about it, and listen, this is not my goal. You asked about goals. It's not to generate revenue. I just love doing this, love meeting new people. I love hearing these type of things that I don't know about. But if we could sort of consolidate the idea of analytics for podcasts, that's a great, great, great plan of action. Because then you know, and then everybody knows, and that business could grow pretty easily. So I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Absolutely. That's a great idea.
Your wheels are turning, I can see.
Unfortunately, they don't ever stop.
Yeah.
Someone said to me, like, when is enough enough? My grandmother worked until she was 88 years old. So I have a long way to go.
Got it. Yeah, I mean, and people ask why. I mean, it sounds like you've sort of set yourself up here. You know, you're probably doing okay. And why do you keep on doing it? I mean, is it because of what? No, well, I'm not going to presuppose. Why do you do it? Why do you keep on doing all these different things?
So if we go further back in the history from before law school, when I was 16 years old, I first joined a volunteer ambulance corps and became an EMT. And I did that for 10 years. Then I was a military police officer in the National Army Reserve and the National Guard. Then I was a police officer. Then I became a paramedic. Then I became a ski patroller and an instructor. And so all of those areas were really making a difference in people's lives, but really touching one person at a time. And so volunteerism and community and helping people and making a difference has been my driving force since I was 16. And so what I realized now, as we're growing and getting bigger and having much further reach, it's just an amazing experience to be able to help so many people, whether they're our clients, now law firms, and now as we're expanding into AI and technology, really any business is where it's going to end up going. It's just, it's what drives me, right? Is helping people, making a difference. I love it.
Got it. Along the way here, I'm assuming that not every venture was successful. I mean, is there any words of wisdom for our bright community where you've sort of, you know, hit a wall and then, you know, recovered and learned, anything like that?
So when I mentioned that when I was partners with Gem Plumbing and Heating, we were so I was responsible for the real estate acquisitions, one of my hats. And so we would drive around neighborhoods and I would show them different buildings that I was working on, whether it was a tax sale, depressed property, foreclosure. And we're driving by this old movie theater and they all start screaming, "Oh my God, the castle's for sale." And I'm like, "What the hell is the castle?" They're like, the movie theater, the castle. And I'm like, "Well, I'm not from here. Never heard of it. Oh my God, I kissed my first girlfriend there." So research it. And I'm like, okay, lawyer, plumber, I don't see movie theater in there anywhere. Like, just research it. So I did the research, got the information, and there was five of us on the board and four voted to do it. I did not. And so, of course, I got put in charge of the project. And so we turned it into this amazing thing. But, you know, it didn't have So I showed them, look, it doesn't really have parking. It's not in the greatest neighborhood. We're surrounded by these large cinemas, showcase cinemas. We're going to have fights over getting product movies. And so they were so driven by emotion, right, to make it successful. And we opened, and in the beginning, I thought, oh my God, I was completely wrong. It's going to be amazing. We were sold out every night. But then the problem started, right? No parking. Someone's car got broken into. Showcase Cinema started holding the product and I couldn't get movies. Then we tried to make it an art. They like just come up with a concept. So then we started doing art films because no one would hold that back. But that population, I couldn't really get them to come to where our theater was because it wasn't a great area. And then we started doing, they're like, try the radio stations and try this and try that. And so we rode that car until the wheels came off. And so if I learned anything, you have to know when to just say, yeah, this wasn't the right decision and pull the plug.
Got it. So that was, and did that carry over to later life? I mean, when you decided to do some other things, I mean, did you pull plugs on many other things? Is that
of course. I mean, so first of all, I think as we get older, right, you learn to slow down and do more analysis. So I definitely, I would go to a seminar and I'd be texting my team. Oh my God, great idea, great idea, great idea. And I'd leave the seminar with 100 ideas and already text them to my team. Stress everybody out, create all this anxiety, come back in the office and say, so what do we got going? And so, you know, I've learned I don't text my team when I go to a seminar. And I try to only come up with 3 ideas when I go to like a 3-day seminar, no more. And so then we take time and most of the ideas I come back with, we decide, you know, this isn't the right fit for us or this isn't the right time. And we're very careful about what we decide to get involved in, what we're going to do, and we take our time. That's definitely a life lesson for sure.
Yeah. And that's the funny thing too, is now I when I invest or I create, you know, potential opportunities, I think of it more in a microcosm now because I am getting older and I'm not thinking, I go, well, we'll get this done in 5 years. Like, I don't want to be thinking, or I don't want the goal to, I don't want the success to be 5 years from now anymore. I become, you know, less tolerant of that. And it's good, you know, it's, you're building something, you see it. But if you build it so that you're relying on it, it's not, not quite the same thing of when I was 30, you know?
Right. Absolutely. It changes as we move through the journey. And I am definitely a different person than I was 3 years ago, a different person than I was 8 years ago. I mean, it's definitely a lifelong journey.
It is. And I like that concept that you said about take your time, you know, because it's what I'm doing now. I start thinking it is the more time that I spend and thinking about something, the you know, the more beneficial it is for myself and everyone around me. So pretty interesting.
Yeah, the more time you take, the more holes you can put in it. And decide, yep, this really isn't the right thing to do, or my idea of how to do it isn't really the right way. Maybe we need to try this or tweak that. It's one of the things I teach is change management. So you want to bring a new idea into your business, right? This is, so for your listeners, any business. So there's what I call the Big Bang Theory, which is I have an idea I want to introduce and that's it. I drop the bomb, and this is what we're going to do. I come back, I tell my team, tomorrow, instead of checking the box A, we're checking box B, and that's what we're doing. And I just roll it out and tell everybody. And so then there's the kind of trickle-down theory. So I go out to my team, and my team tells the next team and the next team, all still going downhill. And then there's the bottom-up approach, which is getting the team involved. So at my law firm, we have advisory boards. So you have the executive board at the top, you have the advisory board, which is team members for different groups. And everybody shares in the process now when we want to come up with something. So for instance, we're redoing our vision. So I'm not going to write the vision statement. I want to hear what you guys think our vision should be. Where should we be going? And then we're going to redo our values. And so by getting the team members to be part of the process, you reduce the anxiety that people have when you introduce a new concept. People hate change. It's just the way it is.
Yep.
And so when we go to change something, if you drop it in the front, you get tremendous resistance the whole way, as opposed to if you do the work up front. by creating a team, letting them work on the idea, rolling it out to the whole team from the team, and then getting a process and plan up front. You've done all the work up front, but then there's so much less resistance, it implements much faster.
Oh, that's good. So I'm sure there was, seeing just you for, this 45 minutes we've been together, I see that you were probably a let's do it guy for a long time before you figured it out.
Yeah, that would definitely be one of those light bulbs. Like at some point, just realizing how much stress I was causing for the team and how much anxiety and the resistance I was getting, the light bulb went off and I realized, okay, there's got to be a better way to do this.
Yeah. But see, this is the crazy thing. And that's part of why I'm doing this podcast, so I can sort of project this, because, my kids don't always listen to me. They'll listen to other people, but not me. They absorb it, so to speak. But why didn't anybody tell me this stuff, when I was 20? And maybe they did, but I don't think so. I mean, it's kind of this weird thing that I have to learn it on my own, but maybe I had to learn it on my own. I don't know. But it seems like if you told me that 30 years ago, I think I would have listened. I would have said, hey, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. That's wishful thinking, if you want me to be honest.
No, that's what I want you to be honest.
I think I tell lots of people lessons that I've learned, but there's only a percentage that are going to be able to implement it. It's very hard for somebody to take your journey, your life's lessons, and implement it. There is definitely the population that will, and I hope all of your listeners are part of that population, but it's just a challenge to teach somebody something that I have learned through experience and my failures and say, hey, here's a better way. Often people need to fail or try on their own before they're willing to really adopt that new model.
Got it. And that's the word is try. They got to try. And maybe that's part of what this podcast is becoming so far, all the different people, all the successful people that we've had on the podcast, they all sort of say the same thing, but in a different way. So perhaps this is what I've always wanted. I wanted someone to explain things to me so that I learn them, so that I can implement them differently. But maybe hearing it from you may be different than hearing it from, Brian Rosen or somebody else that's talking. And maybe that's what this Light Bulb Moments podcast is all about. Well, thank you for the light bulb moment. It got me thinking about something. Why didn't I learn earlier? I love it. I love it. Thank you for that, Rob.
Absolutely. Have you ever seen Tony Robbins live?
I have not. I read a bunch of his books, financial books. I'm a financial book freak. So
I saw him live once, and it was like a rock concert. 3,000 people screaming, yelling. He's spraying them with a hose at different points in the 3 days, I think it was 3 or 4 days. At the end, you walk over hot coals. And what he said was,
what the hell is going on?
Oh yeah, it's crazy. And so everybody there believes that they're going to leave and they're going to implement all of these things that he's teaching, these life-changing skills. And he's like, you've drank the Kool-Aid. And so he tells us that probably 3% of you, based on the history of what I've learned, and I hope all of you, but reality is 3% of you will be able to implement, but keep the change. Most people go back, and the first problem is that you have crabs in a bucket. So the people who weren't at the seminar, who are in your circle, whether they're at work or in your personal life, are, oh, you drank the Kool-Aid, that's ridiculous, right? They resist the change and pull you back down. Have you ever looked at crabs in a bucket? As one crab is trying to get out of the bucket, the other crabs reach up, grab it, and pull it back down into the bucket. And so I think that's just human nature. And so it's a struggle. Creating change is a struggle.
Yeah. So I guess that's what we should pull from this. Don't resist the change. Try not to resist the change.
And have a plan.
Have a plan. No, I mean, we'll go through your process for sure. But but I think I think resisting change just in general is, I think, it could be a learned trait. So, if you have the plan, but then if you're training people to be less resistant and everything, that might be a change in itself. I don't know. What do I know?
I agree.
Before we wrap, I want to talk, because I love it when people that are successful and work hard, in their daily lives, they give back to the community. So if you don't mind, if you could talk a little bit about some of the things you did, you know, in the charitable world. I saw some vehicle, you know, running around in one of your pictures in social media. But can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, of course. So we have a number of different programs in the law firm that we do. So one is for Thanksgiving. I think this is our 9th year doing it. So we started, I think, was originally 25 families. So we purchased the food ourselves and all the fixings for a Thanksgiving meal. So the potato, the butter, the sour cream, the turkey, the dessert. And then we delivered it to 25 homes. And then the next year was 50 and then 100. So this year, I think we're supposed to do 750 families and next year is 1,000.
Wow.
And so it just continues to grow. And it's to be honest with you, not the money that stops us from growing. It's the logistics, right? So to be able to deliver, this year was 500 families, to deliver, to set it up with the supermarket. We bag it ourselves. So now it's in all these, imagine these pallets out in the parking lot. We have to bag all the food, plan the deliveries, plan the routes. People have to be home. So it's quite a process, but it's an amazing experience. Anyone who wants to be involved that works on our team, they have the day off. They get to come and deliver the food and have the rest of the day off. And it's just a great experience for people because, you know, when you walk into someone's home that really needs a Thanksgiving meal and they're in a position where they can't provide it for their family, it's looking at people's faces and expressions and the hugs and the tears. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's a good impact. That's why we do things. I love it.
Yep. We have another program to prevent drunk driving. So 7 holidays a year, we give free rides to people home from a bar to their home. And so we created an app. So in the app store, you just Google my name, Rob Levine. And so the app will come up. And so you can download on any one of the holidays a certificate for a free Uber ride. And if you have Uber on your phone, it will automatically upload from my app right into the Uber app labeled with our certificate. And then you can use that for a free ride, the holiday that it's designated for. So that's been a great program. We've been doing that for probably 6 years or so.
Well, see, that one's, you know, the first one was amazing, but this is, now you're talking about saving lives. You know, that's
right.
That's impactful. You don't know who you save because you saved them. And yeah. I love that. Thank you for doing that.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. So we advertise it on TV. We advertise it on the billboards. The TV stations on the billboards give us free PSAs so that we can get the word out. And then we actually go to bars. I have a team that goes out to the bars and gives out, you know, tabletops are there and information, and the bartenders wear our t-shirts and huge bottle openers. So just trying to create awareness.
Nah, that's wonderful. Did anything inspire that, or did you just one day decide to do that?
Just decided one day. I mean, you know, having been starting, imagine at 16 as an EMT, right? So I've been involved in EMS for a long time. All the families' lives I've seen destroyed on that side. And then as a police officer, all the drunk drivers I've arrested. And then as a lawyer, right, representing people who have had their lives destroyed. I've just seen so much of it over the years. It's just another way to help make a difference.
Awesome. All right. So before we wrap here, do you have anything else that you'd like to add, that you'd like to talk about, book, quote, or just something that could add value to our Bright community?
Quote, if you plan to fail, you fail to plan. Or is that right? It's Benjamin Franklin. If you fail to plan, you plan to fail. So, I mean, that's everything we teach, right, is about planning, right? For any of the businesses we're involved in, other people I coach, either in law or... So I was a couple of months ago at a seminar, which was half doctors and half lawyers. And so one of the doctors came up to me after I presented. And at that seminar, I was presenting on change management. So she says, do you really think you can help my office? I said, if I can help a bunch of plumbers, I'm sure I can help a bunch of doctors.
I don't know if that's true.
No offense. No. Yeah. I mean, that must have been a very exciting seminar. I think I'd rather hang out with the plumbers, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. I got a lot of doctor friends, and I said that for their benefit. Don't worry, guys. All right. Well, anything else you want to add? Anything else I missed?
No, I think that's pretty good. Right. I appreciate it, though.
Cool. So I'll wrap. I'll come back to you in a couple seconds, if you don't mind. All right, everyone. So we got, we learned a lot today in these, a lot of light bulb moments. And it's pretty cool that get a side hustle and try everything. I thought that was important. You know, it's a, you know, Rob is a man of my, you know, after my own heart, you know, because I try as much as I can, and I probably failed in some of the same ways that he did. Remember that your journey is not other people's journey. So don't get mad at them. They've got other plans. They've got other things, and roll with it, and you follow your own journey. Get into work that expands your reach. I really appreciated the comment of picking a practice area that got him across the United States in the Social Security arena. That's important because you never know when the product that you're offering or the service you're offering can help other people throughout the nation and, for that matter, throughout the world. Start with a goal. Always start with a goal. You know, plan ahead for those things. And join a mastermind group, you know, like what Rob does here. It doesn't have to be the mastermind group that he's doing if you're not a PI attorney, but join a group. You know, you got to bounce ideas off of people that are like-minded and smarter than you. Help as many people as possible. Learn to pull the plug when things do not work. Don't text your team with all your ideas. I know I've made that mistake plenty. I'm not going to try to repeat the change management because I want everyone in our Bright community to go listen to that because that was highly impactful. My opinion is that people that resist change try not to resist change. Follow the change management protocol that Rob told you, but concentrate. If you're listening and you're not, you're a leader of some sort, or even if you're a follower, please do that. Listen and don't be resistant because change is good sometimes. And my favorite light bulb moment of today is even attorneys can be entrepreneurial. So we'll see you next week for another positive day of illuminating thoughts and light bulb moments. Rob, thanks so much. This was a blast.
Sounds good. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to Lightbulb Moments. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us out. Don't forget to check the show notes for important links and contact information, or visit lbmpodcast.com. Until next time, keep embracing those lightbulb moments.